Now the vow that you've all been waiting for. I vow that when I attain enlightenment in a future age, if there are any women who suffer from any of the 100 woes that befall women who are weakened at the end of their lives and wish to abandon their female form, when these women hear my name, they all will obtain transformation and rebirth from female into male physical forms. They all will personally experience the supreme enlightenment. Now, the thing I've never understood this is if you no longer have female forms, then it seems to me you no longer have male forms either. Because somehow reproduction happens by some other process. So I'm not quite sure how you could just have male physical forms without having female physical ones. Now, does this mean women are inferior? Yeah?
I thought when I read this, it's just, you know, how every other age, you know, with childbirth, and everything, how hard it is on your body, especially, you know, surgery, you know, repair, strength, and gosh, that's the childbirth.
Mm-hmm. I think it was very much within that context that this kind of thing was said, because, or even you look at, of course, at Rwanda, one in every 9 pregnant women dies in childbirth. I mean, that's pretty heavy duty. So if you look at it that way, you know, there's some definite danger. Yeah? And it is harder on your body and takes a stronger toll. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're right, that has to do with actually acknowledging that it's great sort of PR, we have much better life than any of us.
That individuals created the karma to be reborn into that particular kind of body too. You know, there's probably some collective karma if you live with a certain kind of thing or a certain kind of oppression by society. There's some collective karma involved in that, and then there's also the individual karma involved in each individual taking that rebirth. Now, on the other hand, the men have the difficulty of getting drafted and having to go to war. You know, would you rather have the difficulties of having babies, or would you rather have the difficulties of going to war? Yeah?
Well, it occurred to me when I read this that there's sort of this heart rate that men wish to abandon their female form, that could be sort of seen as applying to the whole line, and that, you know, that women, it's really the only time about women who wish to abandon their female form, mm-hmm. and that these women, when they hear my name, will obtain transformation and rebirth. You know, and so, practitioners
Societies in India, and even in present-day India, the women are very much seen as first under their father, then their husband, and then their son. Yeah, that's heavy. So, So letting the women leave the home life and enter the Sangha was, you know, I mean, that was really compassionate.
That was
going to
say, too, that
had
to change in some
places. That's still away. Yeah. Also, as I get it, we make these vows when we are just, you know, human with all of our things. So like the vows I might be making would be very puzzling at some point to someone, you know, hundreds of years hence. And it'd be like, may I say this or that group? And they would say, you know, they might be insulted by it or upset by it. So some of it is, I think the circumstance when you make the vow, you're not perfect.
Yeah. And it's a culturally bound thing, too. You know, Buddhism exists within a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it has those cultural values. I mean, you could make a vow, you know, may I liberate all African Americans.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe 500 years from now, the African Americans run the country and the white people are oppressed. And,
yeah.
And then people say, well, what's this vow all about?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think, you know, one way of making this vow more understandable is you come with the vow, and other vows that if there are any men call men who are weary at the end of their life, this is the man in the male form. When these men hear my name, they always think that's making the birth of a male and female at this point. And, you know, that's kind of
bound thing too. You know, Buddhism exists within a culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it has those cultural values. I mean, you could make a vow, you know, may I liberate all African Americans. And then, you know, maybe 500 years from now, the African Americans run the country and the white people are oppressed. And, and then people say, well, what's this vow all about? Yeah. Uh-huh.
I think, you know, one way of making this vow more understandable would be to come with the act and other vows that if there are any men who are weary at the end of their lives and this for the end of their male self, when these men hear my name, they always make transformation in the birth of male and female. Even violence that men do.
And we can look at the whole physical and body thing. Men have a lot of physical difficulties in terms of practicing dharma. And even in terms of lifespan, women have a long lifespan, and everywhere we see dharma is long life present. If you practice dharma, you can have no problem to practice. So, in that way, you're going to look at being born here in the past. Maybe this person has nothing in the
form.
And just in the West, I don't know where else in the world, but I think in Oregon, in the classes we teach, about 15-17% of the people who come to classes to educate themselves to improve their health and well-being are the male form. The female form encompasses far more the people who are willing to be dedicated to commit themselves and practice and achieve goals even just in this life. I don't know how true it is in Dharma practice, but it seems a higher percentage are of female form than male form.
You know what always disturbs me is comparison of two groups. And assuming that everybody in one group is like this and everybody in the other group is like that. And thus saying one group is better than the other group. So whether you say it's women or whether you say it's men or whether you say it's pink or purple, for me that always feels quite uncomfortable because it sets people up against each other. And the path is actually something that we do inside of our mind, and our mind isn't male and it isn't female. And so I think, if we get too much partisan into I want to be a male, I want to be a female, the women have more advantage, the men have more advantage, that, again, we're relying on something outside of ourselves to bolster up our sense of self-confidence. And the fact is, we've all been born men, we've all been born women. Yeah. If that feels uncomfortable, we've all been born dogs and cats also. And goldfish and and slugs. So to me the main point is whatever rebirth we have at a particular moment, use it to the fullest to practice the Dharma without having to set up some kind of defense system about why my rebirth is better or why you can't knock my rebirth. Because whatever rebirth we have, it's only for a very short time. So don't get attached to being male or female, because it's not going to last so long.
When I
Speak a little bit louder so other people can hear you.
Mm-hmm. and the spirit gets really weird, that really for our lifetime, raising up families and taking care of all their needs, and just that family experience of staying home with all their children. And so I'd like to really put up on that. And if we can still be kind of where we thought that, which is the most important thing. So we need to respect it.
So there you have another vow for when you become a bodhisattva. May I help people, you know, move past cultural stereotyping. Yeah. And I think in a way what this vow is a call for us all to do is to look at the gender discrimination in our own mind. Whether you're a woman and resent men for whatever reason and look down on them, or whether you're a man and, you know, think you're superior to women, or whether, you know, once you're tall and you think you're better, or you're short and you think you're better, you know, any of this thing of, you know, comparing one group against the other and taking a party line. Yeah? So I think that's a very good vow to make as a bodhisattva, you know, that may I work in society to eliminate all this kind of, you know, stereotyping and discrimination based on external forces, external manifestations. I would like to go on to some of the other vows, or would you people want to stay on this one? There were a few hands. Do you have burning comments? Burn.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say that I agree entirely with what you said also, about the difficulties and I also want to say that I agree with Dan in terms of the importance of language. And, you know, at some point, you know, as we, you know, the, my siblings in the point, you know, we ask, like, our creative and convoluted efforts try to justify something about it, to say that what you exist and that's when we know what it means. And that, I find that assuming to be so honest and so, you know, very rigorous about it, authenticity, and when you get to a point like this, you suddenly were like,
I it is kind of a strange veil, and you're right. It doesn't sort of accord with thinking of the way we're proceeding now that I'm so confused anyway. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's a story. No different from any other story. So I don't know if we need to be upset about it.
Yes? I think I've come across this issue that's from one of the Canadian letters that one of the other asked is something like the female mind has three tendencies that could obstruct the power of developing. I'm not so sure.
I don't know about that.
About what?
It'd be helpful to look at it the way we deal with the analogy with nose on your face and horns on your head. I think that could be very helpful. Yeah.
What is that?
Oh, it's one of the techniques for when you are getting angry or defensive. That if you have a nose on your face and somebody says you have it, meaning like they criticized you and that criticism is true, you don't get angry. They say you have horns on your head, you check you don't have them, you also don't get angry.
Okay. What if you're not really angry? What if you're concerned with how it affects other people? Like, I really don't have to be angry about this. My concern is,
everybody's got to find some way of dealing with these things themselves. Yeah? And everybody will find a different way of doing this. Okay? And some people want to be active and say things publicly, and other people, you know, see it as a story. Everybody's going to have a very, very different way of dealing with it. I don't think we can have a universal here. Yeah, I mean, I certainly believe that as Buddhism comes to the West, in establishing things here in the West, we have to be very careful about translations. We have to be, you know, very careful about all sorts of things so that we don't bring in cultural biases of any type to add on to our Western cultural biases. Okay. But I think it's a little bit difficult to, you know, we can't go back and rewrite the sutras. Okay, so we have to, everybody find their own way of finding some way of dealing with this. You know, and everybody's going to have a different way, whether you interpret it differently and say they really meant something else, or whether you, I mean, everybody's going to have a different way. Did you have something?
I was just going to add, we have to keep in mind the perspective that it was written from. And I was from a man. If we were to reword it to say humans and aliens, and say the aliens are writing it, they're naturally going to say all those who are in human form, may they be reborn as aliens eventually. You know? So we keep the perspective in mind of what the source is.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We go on to, well, we can't go on to the next one because I'm trying this up. Okay, so let's get a cake.